secretary back there, Liz Satterwhite, when I was fishing this morning, and she caught one that's 7 inches long. Her husband told her she couldn't keep it. It was too little. Now she's back there just about to whip him because he threw the bass away. Alan, how about the horseshoe contest?
No, it isn't. Tommy does all right.
It isn't easy to get a show on the road. I've tried operating this horseshoe contest several times, and it's always a fight. And I guess this time, because it's so slow starting, I've only got myself to blame. Because I didn't get here last night in time to really give the urge and get some of the fellas signed up. But anyway, we did have a fair amount that did sign up, and we got at least half of the block started. And all it takes on this horseshoe contest is the ability to throw a shoe from one end to the other without hitting somebody on the other court. And I wish some of you folks that are interested or that can throw a shoe would try it. We're really a little bit short. But anyhow, the contest we did have,
thank you, Alan. Get out there tomorrow and do some pitching. Last night we said Mr. Al Cribbins was in charge of the shuffleboard contest, and he came in this morning. Al, you may have a comment or two you want to make.
We had a lot of activity on the shuffleboard court today. Apparently they were transitory people and not spending too much time with us. We have about four.
Thank you, Al. I was trying to look over the audience and see if Dr. Lorentz was in here. Dr. Lorentz was former head of the department at the University of Georgia and I at Marwick Milling Company. He dropped in this afternoon, but I don't believe I see him in here. And I meant to also introduce this boy, Herb Harris, from up in Georgia. Came down here last year and carried all the prizes away. He brought his wife with him this time, so he's been sort of behaving himself, so maybe he won't get all of them. I don't believe Herb is in. Now to go on with the program tonight, some of you had the pleasure 2 or 3 years ago of listening to this young lady, and she is come back down with us tonight. We're just as happy to have her as we can be. And I'm talking about Miss Thelma Bolton, who is Director of Special Events, Stephen Foster Memorial, up at the Stephen Memorial Park at where?
White
Springs. White Springs, where this completely slipped me. And with her is Mr. Tom Matthews, who is assistant director. We're just as happy as we can have you, as we can be to have you, Miss Thelma. And you come up here, we'll harness you up somewhere where this information will go, this will go out to everybody. And Mr. Matthews is going to record it. Miss Bolton.
Julian can't remember the name of the town is because it's so big. Someone at the supper table asked me the population of White Springs, and I could tell them because it startled me when I moved there 6 years ago. The population then of White Springs was 600, and I think it's still 600. 300 whites and 300 colors. Quite unique. A wonderful place to live, though. It's wonderful to be associated with Stephen Foster Memorial. We think that we are carrying out a very important project at the memorial. First of all, it's important that the river that Stephen Foster helped make immortal is honored by the state of Florida, that a tribute has been created there on the banks to honor the man who made our Suwannee River famous. Wherever there are people, Suwannee, the river is known, and the song is known. Stephen Foster is called a writer of folklore. And you know, that's the exception to the rule, because usually folklore is characterized by the fact that the authorship is unknown. I went out to Boise, Idaho last fall to a board meeting of the National Federation of Music Clubs. And the speaker was from the Historical Society, the curator of the Idaho Museum, and he said that he had charge of history of things that had happened. Isn't that a good definition of history? And I like to think of folklore similarly. Folklore is a record of what man has done to amuse himself. He made up the songs to entertain, to express a mood. Our pioneer forefathers in Florida had to learn to make out with whatever was at hand. So if he had a rising, he'd just step right out here in these piney woods and pick up a prickly pear very carefully, of course, because you know that when you get those prickles in your fingers, they can surely make sores. Peel it carefully and cut it in two and slap it on the boil, and it will bring the boil to a head. And when a fly drowned himself in my coffee out there before supper, reminded me that our pioneer Florida ancestors used lye soap, and when they got the higher culture and could buy soap, they bought octagon soap, of course, and they used that octagon soap as a paste to put on what we call Florida sores, and it's nothing but an infected mosquito bite or a red bug bite that's been scratched too much. But if you put octagon soap on it, it'll cure it when nothing else will. Our forefathers learned that. And I was trying to scratch my head and think of some chicken lore that I had collected. Well, in this area, Marjorie Rawlings collected the material for her great writings, the writings that won her the Pulitzer Prize. You remember, South Moon Under, the Yearling. And do you remember the incident in the Yearling when the little boy's father, Jody's father, was bit by the snake, the rattlesnake, and what he did? He went and got a black chicken and cut it half in two alive. And while it was hot, clapped it on the snake bite to draw out the poison. You remember that? So there's a unique use for the chicken. And here's one right here in my little notebook. Children, I want you to see that I take notes, and I hope that you'll take notes. The little tales and the sayings and the rhymes and the old ways. Put them down so they won't get lost. This is a cure for chicken pox. Stick a feather through the skin back on the back of the neck of the chicken, and that'll cure the chicken pox on you, and it'll also cure the sore head on the chicken. So that's a double cure. And in Alabama, An old-timey cook told me, why, there was just one way to cure the chicken pox. She said, just go out in the chicken house and let all the chickens fly over you. And it was bound to cure the chicken pox. So remember that. Well, my grandmother had a more drastic cure than that. She was a South Carolinian. She said to go out in the chicken house before it had been cleaned up and roll over. And it would surely kill or cure. At the folklore dinner out in Idaho, they served us only food that was grown in Idaho. The pièce de résistance of the evening was a whole lamb born in on a board, a whole roast lamb, and it had been set aflame. And it certainly was spectacular. A whole planked salmon and turkey. Only the breast of turkey. The dark meat was not served at all. I never could find out what they did with all that good dark meat of the turkey. And I don't know whether you turkey growers know this or not, but down in the Indian country around Lake Placid, I'm told that the old timers never bake the breast of turkey. They cut it off, the breast bone, the two big chunks, raw, and slice it raw across the grain and soak it a while in egg and milk, salt and pepper beaten up together. Then shake it up in flour and cook those little strips in very hot fat. Well, Albert Devane says 15 seconds to the side, but I cook mine a little longer than that. Now, if you want to taste something that'll make you swallow your tongue, try breast of turkey cooked like that. And I'm sure that Albert and Jesse Bell Devane learned to cook it that way from the Indians, because certainly they are close to the Indians, and we consider them the authorities on our Seminoles. They are the ones who always bring Joseph Billy, the Indian who sold his tranquilizer to Upjohn for an undisclosed amount of money. And Billy Bowlegs, who is now going on 102. And Billy says his age shows in his legs. He can't walk quite as many miles as he did in the past. But he can still, I bet, get out and outwalk us, because he often... Albert lets him out and he'll walk 7 miles into the reservation from his sister's house onto his camp, about seven miles, and he lives by himself still and cooks for himself. But you know, there's a very charming old way that exists among the Seminoles. Some of the young people in the family consider it a privilege to stay unobtrusively in the background. And one of Billy's nephews or nieces frequently shows up just to visit. And he's actually there to check on the old man, to see that he's well. And I think the ladies would like to know this piece of Indian lore, that a married woman may never go anywhere unchaperoned. She's always chaperoned by one of her daughters. The daughter is the chaperone. We thought that was a very interesting piece of lore. I collect remedies and superstitions, handed down receipts, and if you have an unusual one, I hope you'll pass it on for our growing collection at the memorial. Tales, ghost stories. Do you believe in ghosts?
I don't know a
Have you ever had a hant, haven't you? Well, I'm going to tell you a ghost story right this minute. But before I tell you, in case one comes around your cabin tonight, all in the world you have to do to keep him out is to go down to the lake and catch an alligator and tie a rope around his neck and drag him round and round your cabin till you make a kind of little trail. And no ghost will cross that little trail, so you don't have a thing to worry about. All right, but now you just mark my words. This is a story about a little girl named Elvira who lived 100 years ago. Elvira loved to go visit with her grandparents on a farm way back in the mountains of Kentucky. She loved to watch the haying and the plowing and the gathering of the crops go on. And she loved to play in the barn. And way up in the hayloft, she had a very secret little place, a little hidey hole, way back up there. And she had some little treasures that she'd keep up in the little hidey hole. Her one real treasure was a little gold heart that she wore on a little blue ribbon around her neck. Well, one sunny summer afternoon, Elvira went up into her hidey hole to play, and she fell asleep. And while she was asleep, they brought in a great big load of hay and filled up the hayloft. And little Elvira was trapped up there. They never did find her. They looked everywhere because it was a secret hidey hole. And they moaned and mourned for her. Years passed, and 100 years later, another little girl, went up to that very same farm to visit her grandparents, who had known the story of Elvira, but they had never told little Mary Ann about Elvira. And one bright moonlight night, something awoke Mary Ann, and she looked down in the yard, and there stood a quaint little girl in a very old-fashioned dress, with her hair in old-fashioned pigtails, and she was holding something up to Mary Ann, and she beckoned. So Mary Ann got out of bed and she went downstairs, but when she got out in the yard, the little girl was gone, and she could hardly wait to tell her mother, her grandparents, the next morning about the little visitor in the yard. She said, "You know, Granddaddy, we had a visitor last night, a little girl." And the old people looked at each other and they said, "How was she dressed?" And she said, "Oh, she was a funny little girl. She was an old-fashioned girl. She had on a long dress and pantaloons, and her hair was in braids. And she had a little heart on a blue ribbon round her neck. And she held it out to me, but when I went downstairs, she was gone. But look, she left the heart down there on the old stump for me. And in her hand, Mary Ann had the heart on the blue ribbon that little Elvira had worn 100 years before. You like that story? Do you suppose it's a true story? Well, it could be. But that's the fun of stories, isn't it? Because it lets us use our imagination. You know, when Walt Disney began to film our fairy tales, in lots of ways I was sorry. Because when all of us grew up reading and enjoying and hearing told the story of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and in our imaginations we had our own pictures of the Seven Dwarfs and Snow White and Cinderella and Jack the Giant Killer. And in a way, it's too bad for you to have those wonderful folk heroes and heroines personified for us, because that means that you don't use your imaginations quite as much. Now, maybe I told you this the last time I was here, it doesn't matter, it bears repeating. That amongst the Seminole Indians, I collected one exciting bit of lore. Maybe ghost lore, I don't know, magic lore. But they told me down at Brighton Reservation that not too many years ago, there lived an Indian there on the reservation whose name was Brown Tiger. And he had the power to turn himself into a little man. Now, whether we believe that or not doesn't make any difference, but it is exciting to find that bit of fairy lore, fairy tale lore, existing amongst our Seminole Indians in South Florida. Now, boys and girls, you know there's a fairy story in which an animal fools a big old giant. You remember that? And he went past the property, and the man said, "Whose property is this?" And he says, "It belongs to my master, the Marquis." But soon they came to the rightful owner of the property, and he was a terrible old ogre who possessed magic. And the old ogre changed himself into a lion and nearly scared Pussy and Boots to death. You remember that? And Puss scrambled up a tree and he said, "Oh, well, that's nothing. Anybody can blow themselves up great big." But he said, "It would really be magic if you could turn yourself into something little." And the old ogre promptly turned himself into something little, a mouse. And you remember what Puss did? He ate him up. They got rid of it. And there's that piece of lore existing amongst our Seminole Indians. And I hope some boy or girl here will be a folklore scholar and follow it through and learn some other interesting things about that Indian named Brown Tiger. Remember his name. Did you know that the Indians are very superstitious about snakes? They don't talk to you about snakes. They don't kill snakes. They say this, no see 'em, no hurdle. And I'm sure they learn to use their eyes. And boys, the chief medicine man of the Cow Creek tribe, Frank Shore, and his sons, and an older medicine man who is now dead, Nahal Tiger, volunteered to put some Indian lore on tape for us. And the boys, they spoke in their language, Cow Creek, and the young boys, school boys, interpreted. And they said not many years ago, every Indian boy was taught to move through the woods without cracking a leaf, rustling a leaf, cracking a twig, or making any noise whatsoever, but that the art has now been lost. And I said, well, isn't that a pity? And he said, no, there's no need now to walk so quietly through the woods. But in a way, I do think it's a pity, don't you? And I'm sure you know from your history books that every little Indian boy and every little Indian girl was a proficient hunter and fisher. And they used the spear. They threw a spear. And they would stand on the bank of the river and not fish with a hook and line like you, but they would, their sharp eyes would see the fish and they'd spear it from the shore. And they would spear small game, rabbits, squirrels, birds. They were the little breadwinners for their mothers. And we could talk all night about the Indians, but daylight's a burning. And we have to turn to another interesting body of folklore. As our pioneering ancestors traveled into Florida, they brought with them a treasure trove of song. And I want you to remember that in the South, we are rich because the Negroes brought the only original body of American folk music. All our other music is borrowed from other people. The Scottish ballads, the pretty little love songs, the fun songs. I like to begin always singing. And you know, it's real nice to sing folk songs because you don't have to be a trained singer to do it. And I'm sure that every time our pioneer ancestors were traveling along around the campfire at night before they went to bed, they sang some to ease the problems that faced them and ease the problems of that day. Now, this is a song that I learned from my brother, and I've never seen it written down. And I know that most of you here know it. I was going down the road, oh, Mona, I died demon heavy load. Oh, Mona, I cracked my whip and a leader sprung. Oh, Mona, I just broke the wagon tongue. Oh, Mona, you shall be free. Lord, 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 Mona, you shall be free. Lord, Lord, when the good Lord sets you free. Now down high in hen house on my knees, Mona, thought herds kick and sneeze. Oh, Mona, he sees old heart with a hoop and cough. Oh, Mona, sneezed his head and his tail right off. Oh, Mona, you shall be free. Lord, 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 Mona, you shall be free. Lord, Lord, when the good Lord sets you free. Now, this is one that the boys and girls of Hamilton County taught me. As
As I went over yonder's pond, I spied a frog with a red shirt on, and he leaped 10 feet and he jumped in the mud. He said farewell to his lady love. So rise and let's go home, darling, rise and let's go home. A raiding road and a heavy load and a sorry team, and a what to do I did not know. I ring my whip and I draw the blood, I made them leaders pull out the mud. So rise and let's go home, a darling, rise and let's go home. And notice the similarity of those two songs. And when those children first sang that song for me, it was very difficult to understand those words. A raiding road and a heavy load and a sorry team, and what to do I did not know. I ringed my whip, and isn't that expressive? And I drawed the blood, and you know what he was whooping. He was cracking the ear of that lead oxen or that lead mule, maybe pulling logs out of the swamps along the Suwannee River or along the River of May, or maybe where the River of May rises here in this forest, Lake George. And I think maybe it was a fiddle tune. And you know, if they didn't have any other instrument, they'd have that fiddle. And that's how we came to have the fiddle and straw beating. How many of you, let's see hands, how many of you know what have seen the straw beaters at work? Well, you have to come to the Florida Folk Festival the first weekend in May. We always have straw beaters. Usually the wife would cut broom sedge, and she'd beat time right on the strings as the fiddle was played. And it makes marvelous rhythm. And you see, they didn't have amplifiers in those days. And they needed to make the music loud enough so the dancers could hear it. I learned this one. I hope I can get all the way through it at this year's Folk Festival from a lovely singer who came from Montana by way of St. Louis. And she learned the song from a wonderful folk singer in the Ozarks. And May, the Ozark mountain singer, said that so many of these songs were rocking chair songs. The mother or the granny would sing the song as she churned or as she wove, Or as she spun the thread, or as she rocked the baby. Dumbarton's drums, they sound so bonny. Kisses me across the fields of bounding heather. Dumbarton told me of a pleasure, a song of love that has no measure, when Johnny speaks of love. Dumbarton's drums, they sound so bonny when they remind me of my Johnny. What fun delight to steal upon me when Johnny kisses me. he alone that can delight me. His roguish eye, it doth invite me. And when his tender arms enfold me, the darkest night doth turn. They sound so bonny when they remind me of my Johnny. A song of love that has no measure when Johnny kneels and kisses me. Well, that's exactly what it's meant to do. And you know, I'll just sing you one that I bet you know, and if you know it, you just sing it right along with me. Because the schoolboys and girls up and down Florida have taught me verses. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Daddy's gonna buy you a mockingbird. If that mockingbird don't sing, Daddy's gonna buy you a diamond ring. If that diamond ring turns brass, Daddy's gonna buy you a looking glass. If that looking glass gets broke, Daddy's gonna buy you a billy goat. If that billy goat runs away, Daddy's gonna buy you a load of hay. If that load of hay gets wet, Daddy's gonna lick us all, you bet. And we know another little different ending. If that billy goat gets bony, Daddy's gonna buy you a Shetland pony. If that Shetland pony won't run, Daddy's gonna buy you a BB gun. If that BB gun won't shoot, Daddy's gonna buy you a bathing suit. If that bathing suit don't fit, Daddy's gonna say, oh shoot, I quit. And you see, that's coming right down to the 20th century, isn't it? But that's the way it should be. At the folk festival this year, we had a folk singer who makes up his own songs, and he's making up songs about Florida. He's made up one about Silver Springs, and he's made up one about Tate's Hell up in West Florida. And that's folklore at work, being kept alive. Well, I'll do just one more, and then I think it's time to... Oh, goodness, wait, no. It's time for you to sing these songs with me as a close. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Going to Louisiana, my true love gone to sea. Rained all night the day I left, the weather it was dry. Sun so hot, grown to death, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Had a dream the other night when everything was still. Thought I saw Susanna a-coming down the hill. But sweet cake was in her mouth, the tear was in her eye. Says, I'm coming from the south, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Oh, Cape Town lady, sing this song, do-da, do-da. Camp Town racetrack 5 miles long, oh, do-da.
day. Come down here, my man caved in. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Oh, went back home in my pocket full of tin. Oh, doo-dah day. Oh, I'd run all night. I'd run all day. I bet my money on the bobtail nag. Somebody bet on the play.
Show your interest in Florida folklore is to let me see you all at one time or other at Stephen Foster Memorial. Remember that we have lots of interesting programs. Stephen Foster was born on the 4th of July, and so we have a double barrel celebration that day. Oh, we have a watermelon cutting and old-fashioned games and speaking and always a band and dinner on the ground. Everybody brings his own, of course. And then our book festival, which is receiving national attention, is always the first weekend in May. Now, Stephen Foster died on January 13th, and by act of Congress, that day is National Stephen Foster Memorial Day. And in 1964, we'll commemorate the 100th anniversary of his death. So we'll have a very special program that day. We elect a genie, a Florida genie. And I'm happy to tell you that in 1964, beginning in 1964, we'll give our winning genie a scholarship of $1,000 to carry on her music education. And our genie maids, we hope more than two, the scholarships have been $200 in the past. We hope they'll be $400. So it's extremely worthwhile. There's a program to suit everybody. We hope you'll come. We hope maybe you'll just come by to see the wonderful Fosteriana we've collected in our two beautiful buildings, our Carolyn Tower, and in our beautiful Foster Museum. It's a wonderful place to have a picnic. Thank you so much for letting me come. I wonder if there's anybody who'd like to ask me a question that maybe I can't answer. No question. Class dismissed.